It is now my my great pleasure to introduce one of our own members, Sandra Allen, who will give the presentation, Humanism, a Home for Free Thinkers. Sandra Allen has been a member here since about 1999, and has, I think, done just about every job there is to be done at the Regina Unitarians, including being on the Sunday Services Committee, and I do, my hat does go off, as a coordinator, and also many other tasks. She has a great interest in philosophy, indicates she is currently writing her memoirs, creative nonfiction, she refers to it as. She is tutoring a Korean student through the library here. And I understand as well, also chose the last piece of music as well, which was wonderful. Again, without further ado, Sandra Allen.
Am I on? Can you hear me?
Yes.
Good. Okay. Yes, it was beautiful music. you'll see in a moment what that means to me. That is, that's the art and music of Tan Dun, the Chinese musician. Matter of fact, I chose all the music. Matter of fact, I chose the readings. Matter of fact, I chose the hymns today, too. And that choir did a wonderful job. Thank you. That was just great singing. So thanks, Jamie, and good morning, everyone. I'm honored to be asked by the Sunday Service Committee to introduce the topic of humanism today. My talk is in anticipation of a series of presentations that the committee has planned throughout the year based on selected humanist readings in our book, Singing the Living Tradition. This morning I plan to first define humanism, its types, and its origins. Second, describe the principles that humanists espouse. Third, talk a bit about humanism and morality. And fourth and finally, briefly refer to the humanism in Unitarianism. But before I begin, please indulge me a little humanist humor. Thanks to the American Humanist Association website, somewhat abridged. During the Reign of Terror of the French Revolution, don't stop me if you've heard this before, one morning's executions began with three men, a rabbi, a priest, and a free thinker. The rabbi faced the guillotine first. Asked if he had any last words, he cried out, "I believe in the one and only true God, and he shall save me." The executioner then positioned the rabbi below the blade and pulled the cord. The mechanism plunged downward, but suddenly, with a crack, it stopped just inches above the would-be victim's neck. The rabbi said, "I told you so." The crowd gasps, "It's a miracle," and the executioner had to let the rabbi go. Next in line was the priest. Asked for his final words, he declared, "I believe in Jesus Christ, the Father, Son, and Holy Ghost, who will rescue me in my hour of need." The executioner then positioned this man's head on the block and pulled the cord. The blade flew downward as before, stopping just short of its mark. "Hallelujah!" shouted the priest, And the disappointed crowd sighed, another miracle. And the executioner let the condemned go free. Now it was the free thinker's turn. What final words have you to say? Asked the executioner. But the free thinker was staring raptly at the ominous engine of death. Finally, he cried out, you gullible, superstitious fools, those weren't miracles. You've got a blockage in your gear assembly right there. So that might explain why there are so few free thinkers today. Now, a theist might say that the Almighty was watching and created the guillotine blockage to save the believers. But the free thinker, if he'd survived, might respond, did you see him do it? Now to my first task, the definitions, types, and origins. I have 6 points to make under definitions. They're dry. Bear with me. First, humanism, and I'm talking about secular humanism here, but more about that in a minute, is a broad category of philosophies concerned with human interests, values, and dignity. It believes that human beings possess the power to solve their own problems through reason and the scientific method. Number two, humanism is more a general life stance or attitude rather than a specific doctrine. It upholds human reason, ethics, and justice. Its ultimate goal is human flourishing, doing good and living well in the here and now, and leaving the world a better place for those who come after. Humanism affirms, this is number three, the dignity and worth of all people and their ability to determine right and wrong through rationality. It focuses on self-determination and endorses universal morality based on the common condition, human condition. Number four, humanism believes in the naturalistic view of the universe that considers all forms of the supernatural as myth. It regards nature as the totality of being and as a constantly changing system of matter and energy existing independently of any mind or consciousness. Number five, humanism considers faith an unacceptable basis for action and is opposed to seeking truth through revelation, mysticism, tradition, or anything else that is incompatible with the application of logic to the observable evidence. And six, humanism emphasizes individual freedom and responsibility, human values and compassion, and the need for tolerance and cooperation, rejecting authoritarian beliefs. Now for the types, and there are several types of humanism, but some are less significant for our current interest than the three I've chosen to highlight today. Two of these are most familiar to us, but I believe a third deserves a mention for you to contemplate. First, secular humanism is considered a default meaning of humanism. As I've already described, it's the branch of humanism that rejects belief in the supernatural. Secular humanists, often scientists and academics, generally assert the right to be free from religious rule and teachings on the basis that supernatural beliefs cannot be supported using rational arguments. And there is religious humanism. This branch of humanism embraces some form of theism, deism, or supernaturalism without necessarily belonging to an organized religion. It is often associated with artists, scholars, and in the liberal arts, and liberal Christians, many of them Unitarians. Religious humanists feel that secular humanism is too coldly logical and ignores the full emotional experience that makes humans human. Perhaps at a future time, and I'm serious about this, we could have a Sunday presentation on this type of humanism, if anyone is interested in making one. And finally, the one that I would like to mention is post-humanism. This is a late 20th century philosophy which attempts to bring humanism into a modern scientific world and to counter certain allegations which have been leveled at humanism. One of these is speciesism, that is, discrimination in favor of one species, especially the human species, over others. Has anyone seen Harry's Law? Have you seen the episode with the gorilla? It's a television series with Kathy Bates. And it's very meaningful with regard to speciesism. Try to catch it if you can, a rerun. Though it's a little melodramatic, it's right on this topic. Anyway, definitely something to think about there. In my view, post-humanism would also be worthy of a presentation here at some future time. The questions it raises fit with an astute phrase I found during my research. Humanism is said to be marinating in questions, not producing certainties. And briefly, let me review some of the origins of humanist thought. It can be traced back to Buddha and Confucius, although the term humanism is more widely associated with Western philosophy. In ancient Greece, we have names like Thales, Pericles, Democritus, Thucydides, all instrumental in the development of free thought and away from spiritual morality based on the supernatural. Many medieval Muslim thinkers pursued rational and scientific discourses in their search for knowledge, meaning, and values, and were open to humanistic ideas. Renaissance thinkers promoted human worth and individual dignity and believed in the practice of the liberal arts for all classes. Such notables as Petrarch, Erasmus, or Thomas More, and Rabelais can all be considered early humanists. In the 19th and 20th centuries, various organizations were founded to promote humanist principles, including the British and American Humanist Associations. Now, my second major task is to review the principles of humanism. Several versions are to be found in the literature. I'll just refer to three. The first comes from the American Humanist Association and is entitled Humanist Manifesto 1, drafted in 1933, and I credit Carol Porter for her initial research. Time doesn't permit my reading the whole thing. There are 15 rather wordy principles. Suffice to say that the document set the tone for later, more concise versions, but the gists of the first and second principles of the manifesto are noteworthy for our purpose here. 1. Religious humanists regard the universe as self-existing and not created. And 2. Humanism believes that man is a part of nature and that he has emerged as a result of a continuous process. A nod to Darwin there. I'll also mention the first sentence of the fifth principle. Humanism asserts the nature of the universe depicted by modern science makes unacceptable any supernatural or cosmic guarantees of human values. The manifesto was signed by 34 thinkers of the day from different walks of life. Prominent among them was John Dewey, the eminent professor of philosophy of education at Columbia University. And tellingly, 10 of the 34 were Unitarians. Another set of principles comes from Corliss Lamont, as stated in his book, The Philosophy of Humanism. Lamont was a noteworthy mid-20th century, and controversial, let me add, mid-20th century American philosopher, who was also associated with Columbia University, and who became heavily involved in U.S. politics of the day. You can ask our resident authority, Terry Chadwick, for the details of Corliss Lamont's life and thoughts, right? Lamont's principles of humanism are similar to others, but I particularly like the seventh, which speaks to me of the joy and wonder and awe that are what I call spiritual experiences when I'm immersed in the magnificence of art or music or nature, as I was with that Tan Dun little piece during the offering. Here's Corliss Lamont. Humanism believes in the widest possible development of art and the awareness of beauty, including the appreciation of nature's loveliness and splendor, so that the aesthetic experience may become a pervasive reality in the lives of all people. And a couple of eminent scientists weigh in on this point. Richard Dawkins approximates Lamont's sentiments with the following. The feeling of awed wonder that science can give us is one of the highest experiences of which the human psyche is capable. It is a deep aesthetic passion to rank with the finest that music and poetry can deliver. It is truly one of the things that makes life worth living. And here, in part, is Albert Einstein on a similar theme. Our task must be to widen our circle of compassion, to embrace all living creatures and the whole of nature in its beauty. Nobody is able to achieve this completely, but the striving for such achievement is in itself a part of the liberation of the self and a foundation for inner security. On a personal note, back to Corliss Lamont, I discovered something rather moving when I looked him up. As a student at Columbia, he first studied with John Dewey and later became a faculty member. While I can't place Dewey or Lamont there at precisely the same time as my father, who earned his PhD at Columbia in 1947, I do know that Dewey was there a few years before Dad and Lamont immediately after. Maybe there was something in the air. I see them both in Dad's philosophy of education and of life. My last brief look at principles considers a very interesting 1997 document drafted by the Counselor for Human Secularism with a lengthy list of 21 principles. These are right at hand. You can peruse them at your leisure in the framed document on the bulletin board at the back of the sanctuary. They were generously donated by Alan Knox. My third task is to talk about humanism and morality. But first, I'd like to speak briefly about my journey to humanism. As a teen, I initially understood that being a good person meant being a Christian. My friends were all Christians, so I went to Sunday school with them. But there was one hitch. I didn't believe that Jesus was divine. I'd been raised to choose my own beliefs and wondered, hopefully, if I could be a Christian, i.e. a good person, without believing in Christ. Thus began my lifelong search. And here I am at secular humanism. I could not have it any other way. In reference to the common sentiment that our morality comes only from adherence to religious tenets, I refer to modern research projects in the animal kingdom that point toward the idea of morality as inborn rather than taught. The conclusion is drawn from the experiments that primates and other species are capable of empathy towards other members of their species. Results suggest, therefore, that the altruistic behavior of all living beings is innate and not learned. Notable among the researchers is Franz de Waal, a primatologist in the psychology department at Emory University in Atlanta, and a director at the Yerkes National Primate Research Center. He is the author of numerous books, including Chimpanzee Politics, Our Inner Ape, and more recently, The Age of Empathy. His work is available on the internet if you're interested. In addition, as I was listening to the CBC's Quirks and Quarks recently, I heard Bob McDonald interview a researcher who was looking into altruism in rats. Her group found that rats, too, exhibit helping behavior. You see, there were these two rats, each in a separate cage in a big open space. The one rat could get out of his cage. The door was closed, but it wasn't latched, so he quickly got out. The other rat was in a cage whose door was latched, couldn't get out. And over here was a treat. I can't remember what it was, but let's say cheese. So the free rat ran over to get the cheese and then noticed that the other rat didn't join him. So he came back to the cage and worked very hard all around the cage trying to open it so the imprisoned rat could get out. He finally figured out the latch, and out they both came to play and enjoy the cheese. The work of these scientists suggests that living beings are wired for altruism, just as they are for other innate characteristics. For example, as humans are for language. And now my fourth and final task, to refer to the humanism in Unitarianism. Humanists are and have been all along among us, like Robert T. Weston, who wrote today's readings, and many other well-known Unitarian ministers whose sermons appear on our CUC website. Weston was a Unitarian church minister of great influence, humanist influence, in Louisville, Kentucky during the mid-20th century, amidst the civil rights movement, the anti-Vietnam War efforts, and the early days of the abortion debate. And the church was very involved in counseling and activity in those spheres. There are many more like him, and of course we have our very own, with a fond memory and a salute to dear Jim Struthers. I feel quite at home with humanism here in the Unitarian Fellowship. I have but to reread our principles to reinforce my feeling. I can see humanism alive and well in them. I encourage you to review them from time to time, and I think you will ask, how could one put it better? In my view, in these concise ethical phrases, are all the words in the world we need to live by. Let me conclude with a lovely little passage from a novel called Waiting for Columbus, by Edmonton writer Thomas Trofimuck. It's about a mental patient with no memory of his true identity, who now imagines himself to be Christopher Columbus. Here he is in conversation about the Spanish Inquisition with his imagined friend Juan over a glass of wine. Juan asks, "Should we not be free to choose our own path to God? Or to choose no path at all? When you have to use violence, intimidation, and fear to impose your religion, you will never succeed. It should be called the imposition, not the inquisition. What would you suggest? To hold no beliefs? Is that even possible? I don't know, but I would like to try." Juan unconsciously nods his head. "Well, to not believing then," Columbus says, raising and tilting his glass slightly toward Juan. "To uncluttered minds and hearts," says Juan, taking a drink. Thank you. Have some time for questions if you... comments, questions?
Yes, thank you very much, and I'm sure there are questions.
Or comments.
Ashley, as one of the group of three who came up with the idea that Pam Bocking and Helen Christensen and myself are the little project group who picks a theme for us every so often, and we chose humanism, and I suggested Sandra as the person to do it because I knew she could do it really, really well.
Okay.
And thank you. I was not a bit disappointed. Oh, by the way, the treat was chocolate.
Oh, was it chocolate?
It was chocolate.
Thank you.
The rats love chocolate.
Of course it was chocolate.
Thank you so much, Sandra. You've given me a great deal to think about.
Thank you.
Thank you, Sandra. Very well done. I was just wondering, in your research, did you find anything that surprised you about humanism?
I hadn't thought about post-humanism. I had not gone that far, but it really speaks to me now that I know about it. And lo and behold, to my wonder, was this Harry's Law, which I just happened upon it, this program. Did you see it? Well, it's amazing because the gorilla, and as I said, it's very melodramatic, but the gorilla has escaped from the zoo. And he belongs to the zoo. But where he goes is to the yard of a young woman who, well, I'm not sure if she's an animal rights activist or anything. She's very, very empathetic, sympathetic. And he appeals to her in some way, and she takes him in and gets to know him. And then, of course, the zoo owners come back at her, and there's a court case. She wants him declared as a person. She wants to adopt him. And she loses the case, of course. But the word speciesism is definitely the theme of this particular case, and it was most interesting. So I would say post-humanism. The rest of it, I guess, I sort of already knew. Anything surprised you about your reading on humanism? That's for another time.
One of the things that I appreciated was the fact that when you mentioned that we have secular humanists and we have religious humanists, I think we have to be careful. And I'm speaking as I can't call myself a new member anymore, but newer than you are anyway here, that we have to be careful that we are inclusive, because not all of us in this room are secular humanists. We are who we are. And that, I think, is very important.
And I really do mean it. I hope that there will be a presentation on religious humanism. I think it would be important.
Sandra, I'm just interested in your sort of personal coming to the place that you're at right now and what your journey has been. And when I think about secular humanism, I'm just wondering if we see human beings as sort of the end or the ultimate, and everything comes back to logic and so on, have you had any personal struggle yourself about accepting that that there might not be anything greater than a human being and a human being's capacity to have logic and reason and so on? Because we certainly see people whose logic doesn't seem to match with our own. I'm just wondering what you think about that.
As I was writing this, Andrew, I thought, oh boy, what if we're the last? And what happens after we've done ourselves in? And I don't know. It occurs to me that we'll become more and more computer-like. I'm glad I'm living in this time, horrible as it is, but I'm glad I've had this experience. I believe it's finite. So, yeah, that's interesting to speculate. You can give a paper on that.
I'm often asked what I believe in if I don't believe in Jesus in the Bible, and quite often I find myself just kind of confused how to answer, and I say, I believe in being a good person, and but I also believe in, whether it's curiosity or just a fantastical way of thinking of life, that there might be something more, because there are synchronistic things that happen, or karma or whatever. So does that make me a religious humanist then?
It makes you whoever you want to be.
You know? I mean, it's a label, but I'm like, if you, I said that to somebody, what are you? And I could say, I'm a religious humanist, and there'd just be more questions.
You know what? You get into trouble when you try to label yourself. I've discovered that. So I think your good person idea is a good one. And a good person with an open mind might take it a little farther. My granddaughters, whom I've told you about, one of them, we were sitting at the table, they sat down and had dinner one night, and Jessica said, Granny, do you believe in God? I'm not ready for this. I said, I thought, truth? No, Jessica, I don't. I believe in being a good person. So that was really, I wanted to take it farther, but we had really no build-up, no background, so I couldn't do anything more than that. But anyway, they do think about it. And the thing to do is to hope that their minds stay open so that they can find their own way.
Hi, Sandra. Lovely presentation.
Thank you.
I have no comments on the presentation, but as I'm listening to this, I'm thinking of a book right now that I'm also currently reading. And it's one by Stephen Prothero, and he writes on religious literacy. And so what his goal right now is to provide that. And so he has another book out right now that is called God Is Not One. And what it does is it, within that, he tries to take a look at how each one of the religions perceive, how they look at what their definition is of what man is, and then how they perceive the problem and how they perceive the solution. So it's all based on a religious literacy. And as he points out, Buddhists, anyway, he's got tons of definitions and all sorts of information, so it's a good source book right now.
There's another idea for a presentation. Ethel, you haven't done one for a while. Yes, we do.
I don't know if there are any further questions, I believe that Sandra will likely stay for a little bit of time downstairs, where all the real problems get solved. So again, I'd like to take the opportunity to thank you once again for a wonderful and thought-provoking presentation.